Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.
Sans Pants Radio. Australia's most American podcast network.
Hey, what's Pac-Man, everybody? Welcome to the Cynical Cartoons podcast, where today I watch Scoob with Jackson Bailey. Jackson uses he, him pronouns. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at StopTweetingMia. Thank you for listening to the Cynical Cartoons podcast for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm here if you need to talk. I'm going to take a long drink of water and then we'll jump into it.
Get hydrated. That's the thing.
Hell yeah, getting hydrated and also excited to talk about Scooby-Doo, honestly.
I'm so excited to talk about Scooby-Doo.
I got my mystery ink friend with me that I always can go to when I got a hankering for Scoob, and I'm like, what's new in the world of Scoob, Jackson? Let's talk about it.
I'm so excited. This movie, sitting down and watching it, and like, and it's in my notes, but it's in my notes way down toward the end. I just kept having, bubbling to the surface, the thought, wow, this movie really sucks. Like,
yeah.
You watch a movie, and it just, occasionally it bubbles up. You're like, oh, yeah, wow, I hate this. I hate everything about this. This is a bad film.
Yeah, it really reeks, and it sucks because I guess that they were, like, trying to make this the Scooby-Doo Spider-Verse, right? Like, that's what I thought it was going to be when I heard about this, like, 6 months ago. I was like, okay. So they've got, like, Scooby-Doo and Mystery Inc. They've got a bunch of characters from the Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe barf. Like, maybe they could pull this off. Like, I didn't think that Spider-Verse was going to be any good, and then it blew me away, and maybe this will be good too.
Absolutely.
No, I'm stupid. I'm an idiot, and clearly this is a shameless cash grab, and even more so of a cash grab than every other Scooby-Doo cash grab ever made. It's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, like, for some reason, nobody can ever seem to make a good Scooby-Doo. Like, look, hey, Scooby-Doo, the live-action one, is a great film. Whether it's a good Scooby-Doo movie, I don't know, but it's a great film.
I would also argue that it kind of is, though. Like, it's a deconstruction of the Scooby-Doo narrative and, like, breaks all their characters down to their bare components and then rebuilds them back up in a very 2002 kind of way. This movie doesn't do
but
any of that.
But it does
we'll
do it. You're right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. But this film was just, because when all of the, like, it was announced, because, you know, you have Scooby-Doo and Mystery Inc., you have Jabberjaw and the undersea folk, you have Speed Buggy, whatever the car version of Scooby-Doo is.
Right, Funky Phantom, you got Josie and the Pussycats, who else, Yogi Bear could show up, who knows?
Yeah, but there's, like, mystery-solving teens plus a talking something. So, like, if they were going to build a cinematic, that's what I thought it would be. It was like, oh, it's a global monster, and all the mystery-solving teens have to come together and sort it out. But no, it's a movie about superheroes for some reason.
Well, strangely enough, it seems like what your idea for the movie was what they were trying to do a few years ago when Dax Shepard was involved. Was like when Dax Shepard signed on in 2016, they announced like it's going to be about like Global Mystery Inc. So like you get all the different teams that are very similar together, and like the whole joke is like, look at how similar they all are.
That's funny.
Yeah. Here it's like, hey, let's team up Scooby-Doo with like one of the least known Hanna-Barbera properties because we want to somehow make a solo movie for that character. But the thing is that even the idea that we are both saying would be good would also be horribly cynical and bad. Like,
yeah,
the synergy going on here where they're like, hey, guess what? We're going to name drop all kinds of franchises in this movie, and all of them are owned by Warner Brothers. We got, these are all the brands that they mentioned in this movie. There's no, like, brands, by the way. I'm glad that they don't, like, take some time to eat some Pizza Hut and drink a Sprite or something, but fuck it. In this movie, these characters are either mentioned or appear. Harry Potter, Wonder Woman, Blue Falcon, Dino Mutt, the Hex Girls, Captain Caveman, Dick Dastardly, Dee Dee Skies, Muttley, Lord of the Rings, the Great Grape Ape, Adamant, and Jabberjaw. And like most of those, you don't know who the fuck those characters are.
No.
Like Dee Dee Skies is in this movie so much. Do you know where she originated?
I had to look it up. I was like, this has got to be somebody.
Yeah.
And then, so, because I looked it up and Dee Dee Skies is the leader of the Captain Caveman mystery solving team.
Is she the leader of them? Because I've never seen that show, but it seemed like she would have been in like a Valerie from the Josie and the Pussycats kind of role where like she's the most competent, but also not the leader because she's a black woman in a cartoon made in the 1970s.
Well, apparently she fills the Velma role, is what the Wikipedia article said.
Right, that's sort of what I expected. Like, she's the most competent, she's there, she's doing stuff, and everybody's like, shut the fuck up, I got this, I'm a white man.
Yeah, I'm Captain Caveman. I'm the epitome of a white male. I'm Captain Caveman.
Well, I meant like the Fred equivalent from that show, but you understand.
Yeah. But then, because Captain Caveman is in this movie, voiced inexplicably by Tracy Morgan, which was fucking left field. I did not expect that. I thought that at the end that there would be like a Diddy Sykes and Captain Caveman team up to save the day, or like are somehow, and they're like, oh, that's Hanna-Barbera being like, oh, eventually we'll make a Captain Caveman movie for nobody. But no, Captain Caveman's just in it for like, I don't know, one scene for no reason.
Well, that's sort of the element of this that's so disgusting, is that they have this opportunity to bring in all of these characters and do this also disgusting thing of like synergistically, like, you love Jabberjaw and Scooby-Doo and Josie and the Pussycats, so here's all the characters you love. Instead, it's like, hey, here's a bunch of characters you've never fucking heard of, and then next time, if we get a sequel, maybe we'll bring in the characters that you kind of remember a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, you have dangerously overestimated the power, the selling power of Blue Falcon and Dee Dee Skies and Dino Mutt. Like, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't have been necessarily better, but what do you think would have been a better team-up movie from Hanna-Barbera characters? Who were you excited to see here that never showed up?
Oh, man, who am I excited to see that never showed up? My God. I mean, like, the only real Hanna-Barbera characters I ever really loved were Scooby-Doo. Like, my dream film is just Scooby-Doo.
That's unrealistic, Jackson. A Scooby-Doo movie about Scooby-Doo and his friends? No, never.
What am I talking about?
Set your standards lower.
What they could have done, and what I was thinking maybe was going to happen, is you get rid of Blue Falcon, and it's just Scooby-Doo and a wacky racist team up. And Dick Dastardly's still the villain. And I thought that might happen at some point. Like, Dick Dastardly has gone evil in the way that he's evil now because of something that happened with the wacky racers. But the wacky racers just weren't mentioned ever, which is crazy. But I thought as well, there's that scene at the fairground where Dick Dastardly is on a roller coaster cart with his little robots underneath it. I think Dino Mutt's a cart as well. and Blue Falcon and Shaggy are also in a cart, and I was like, are they going to do a Wacky Races joke? But they didn't. It just seems weird to introduce Dick Dastardly and never reference the Wacky Races.
Well, that's the thing, is that they've taken all of these characters, they bring them all in, devoid completely of their subtext of who they are. Like, Dee Dee Skies is hanging out with the Blue Falcon when she actually is part of the gang that hangs out with Captain Caveman, but then Captain Caveman shows up and she doesn't seem to know him, and it's like, why is any of this... Okay,
why is anyone here?
My punch up on the movie is I really, really wanted the Hex Girls. Clearly,
some
of my favorite Scooby-Doo characters, probably hands down, like Thorn from the Hex Girls, A+, 10 out of 10 character. They even tease them a couple times in the movie. Like, they show up in poster form. They don't even cameo or anything. But, like, I think instead of making a movie about a white man superhero who's, like, obsessed with, like, his... legacy that he's inherited from his dad. What the fuck are we talking about?
Oh my God.
Make it about the Hex Girls and the Scooby Gang, or make it about Josie and the Pussycats and the Scooby Gang. Like, if you want to pretend like your movie has strong female characters, Daphne, Velma, Dee Dee Skies, fucking do it. Fucking do it. You know, people love Josie and the Pussycats, but they're not profitable enough to sell their own movie. They're not a big enough name. Fucking use them to sell this one.
Yeah, it's crazy that instead of Josie and the Pussycats, who have had a movie, like a successful cult film, like live action adaptation that everyone loves.
And have a long running comic book, like they're still a part of the cultural zeitgeist. People love that band.
More people remember Josie and the Pussycats than they'll ever remember Jabberjaw. Like, that's, we gotta just accept that in this life of ours, you know? But no, for some reason, they don't even get a mention at no point. There's a line in this movie. Just after Shaggy and Scooby get taken away by the Blue Falcon, and Velma and Daphne and Fred go to the bowling alley to find them, and they ask the lady that works at the bowling alley, have you seen Shaggy around? And the lady at the bowling alley says, oh yeah, there was a guy in here, and he said like a lot in his sentences, like an old man might think a hippie speaks like. But I don't think you can say that in your film when all the dialogue sounds like what an old man thinks a teenager sounds like. You gotta be so confident.
They're like trying to take down the original series for being written by a bunch of old white men that don't know what teenagers sound like. And then you look at the people that wrote this movie and they're all like uninspired old white men. And you're like, the moment that's really indicative of this whole film for me, right, is towards the end of the movie when, like, they're talking about the Mystery Machine the whole time. They're like, oh, this old piece of shit. Like, she's gonna break down. Mystery Machine breaks down, and then Blue Falcon gives them a new Mystery Machine that's like, it's the same, but it's newer, and it looks the same, but it's newer, and it's different, but it looks the same. And it's like, that's this whole fucking movie, and that's every Scooby-Doo reboot, to be
fair.
They're all cynical. But, like... this movie makes so many decisions where they're like, hey, here's a new Mystery Machine for no reason. Or Fred doesn't wear an ascot in the movie for no reason. And then at the end, he puts on his ascot for no reason. And you're like, why are you... this doesn't mean anything to me.
Who cares?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Who gives a shit if he's put on the ascot? And it's weird to have that happen, which is like, they're like, oh, like classic Scooby-Doo.
The gang is back. This is what you wanted, right?
Yeah, but it happens when the Mystery Machine is destroyed because Fred's so cut about that, but that's never been a characterization of Fred, so you're giving me, like, a thing that means nothing, and you're saying that it means you know what I mean?
Right.
You're like, this emotional moment isn't emotional, and it's not, like, a classic Scooby-Doo thing, so it doesn't make sense that he would be putting on a classic Scooby-Doo outfit. It's so strange. Shall we go through the plot of the film?
Yeah, we should absolutely do that. I have a lot of notes here. Are you okay if this takes like an hour and a half? Because Jesus fucking Christ,
of course.
This movie. I would have been furious. I was furious. I was yelling at the screen in my home. I would have been a lot more mad if I had seen this in theaters. This is not theatrical quality film. It's fucking terrible.
It like looks really bad. Like it looks like it was made in 2010. Like I don't know why. And like, hey, I'm sure we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But Simon Cowell's in this movie
Oh my God.
But Simon Cowell's face looks like a weird Polar Express version of Simon Cowell's face.
Right.
But everybody else's face are cartoons. And it's so unpleasant to look at.
Especially at the moment where they take off a mask of a cartoon character and then underneath it is a hyper-realistic Simon Cowell and you're like, oh no! Yeah. Like, how is that? He doesn't match this universe. It doesn't make any sense.
Why does... It's so baffling how often the Simon Cowell stuff comes back. Like, Simon Cowell was at the end in the special credits thing of Shrek 2 for Faraway Idol, and that was a dated reference. So the fact that Simon Cowell is somehow in 2020's Scoob is just... It's disgusting.
It's so weird because there's two elements to this that I want to break down, right? Of the Simon Cowell being the celebrity cameo. Strange.
Yeah.
Number one is that they have much bigger stars in this movie than Simon Cowell. Like, they cast Zac Efron, they cast fucking Will Forte and Christina Hendricks and Mark Wahlberg in this movie. Mm-hmm. And those are all much bigger stars than Simon Cowell. And so it's like, one, why can't you get a better celebrity cameo? Two, if you want all of those people in your movie, just make them dumbass celebrity cameos. And then, like, get real voice actors to play these characters.
I mean, like, you can see all over Twitter that the current voice actors for, like, the cartoon version of the Scooby-Doo characters are so, so upset. And you can, like, Will Forte does, I guess, an admirable job of doing, like, a Shaggy impression.
That is the hardest disagree. That is the biggest disagreement I've ever had with anybody on this show, Jackson. And you're lucky that we have a rapport, because I will allow you to say it.
Phew. I'm glad you didn't just end the Zoom meeting just then.
Goodbye.
That would have been so fair. It wasn't good, but it was like, I knew that it was Shaggy, but Daphne, even Fred, like, they didn't sound like Daphne.
Yeah,
like,
Velma's bad too.
Oh, Velma was so bad.
It's so weird because, like, it's a situation where you understand why they want to bring in all of these actors and get big names behind a studio, theatrically released movie. I understand why you would do that, right? But, like, these are actors that have played these characters for the last 20 years. They're the main actors that have played these characters for the last 20 years, and they picked up the legacy from the last actors who played these characters for 20 or 30 years, who both fucking died. So, like... The actors, Grey DeLisle and Matthew Lillard, should at least be given an audition, but they didn't even know the movie was happening until the cast was announced. And it's like... That's real gross, guys. Like, come on.
That's so rough. I guess it's like a weird thing. Like, this film, it's so hard to figure out. Not the target audience, necessarily. But clearly, you get a celebrity voice actor because you don't have the confidence in the selling powder. selling power.
Right.
Of the film, like, in and of itself. So you're like, well, if we say Zac Efron's in it, if we say Mark Wahlberg's in it, that's, like, star power. People are going to come and watch it. But... Also, those are celebrities. Like, Mark Wahlberg is not appealing to children. And is the film aimed at children? It should be.
It is. It skews very young, I would say.
But it does that weird thing where all of the references are for people who... Like, it's Blue Falcon. But a kid isn't going to know who Blue Falcon or Dick Dastardly are. So why are they Dick Dastardly and Blue Falcon? What's the...
Right.
It's like when they reboot, like, a 80s cartoon for, like, a modern audience, where you're like, the kids don't know who this is, so they don't care, and it's not for the, like, adults who watch it as a kid, so they don't care. So who's getting anything out of this? Like, I don't know. I don't understand.
And they do, like, a lot of updating to the humor of the original show. Like, instead of a lot of, like, pot-smoking jokes, now it's, like, jokes about Tinder or... I don't know.
The Tinder joke. They get on Instagram.
Talk about the Tinder joke.
Let's talk about the Tinder joke, because the joke, so Blue Falcon or Brian is like, hey, something, something that I read on the internet. And then Dynamutt is like, remember the last time you read something on the internet? You thought that Tinder was a place to get firewood online. But that means that all he did was get what Tinder is wrong. And... Like, it's not even like it's implied that he went out and had a gay hookup, which would be, like, the kind of joke that I can imagine this movie making maybe 10 years ago. But all it means is that he was like, oh, Tinder is this. And Dynamutt was like, you idiot. You moron. That's not what Tinder... Like, it was the safest Tinder joke imagined.
Oh, my God.
That whole joke was so strange.
I will say, though, the second part due of my issue with Simon Cowell being in this movie...
Yeah, please.
Is it just points out what like insane starfuckers Scooby and Shaggy are. Yeah. That literally they see somebody who they know is a celebrity and they're like, I'm gonna sing for this guy, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna suck his fucking dick, I'm gonna suck the Blue Falcon's dick, yeah. I'm gonna do that. Cause they just like like I know that in the original cartoon they're like, Oh geez, Scoob, oh it's Dick Cavett. And you're like, you don't fucking care about Dick Cavett, shut up.
Rook, it's Rick Ran Reich.
Like, when you take away, like, the joke of the thing, like, in the new show, the new Scooby-Doo cartoon, they every week they meet some celebrity, and it's, like, a joke that they care about meeting Ricky Gervais. And that's kind of a funny idea.
Yeah.
Here, they're so incredibly excited to meet Simon Cowell, and it's like, fuck, this sucks. They're the worst.
It's so strange. Like, I don't relate to Scooby and Shaggy being impressed that Simon Cowell is here. Like, I'm not like, yeah, like every teen, I love Simon Cowell. I'm absolutely with them. Also, really baffling that they go to Simon Cowell, who's, like, everybody's touchstone, I think, for Simon Cowell, obviously, is American Idol.
Yeah,
but right. They're going to Simon Cowell for financial advice about how to make money as Mystery Inc., which is just... Like, yeah. I don't know who would have been better for that role, but why Simon Cowell?
Well, I mean, and I guess it's even less so that they're looking for financial advice about the team, but more that they're like, how do we rebrand our image? Let's find somebody who's really hip and with it and knows what's hip and hot.
Yeah.
Simon Cowell. No, thank you. That doesn't make any sense.
That does not check.
So they have a lunch with Simon Cowell, and we're skipping over all the kids stuff. We might come back to it. It was fucking stupid. Who cares?
Yeah.
They have a lunch with Simon Cowell, Mystery Inc. does, and Simon Cowell is like, look, you're the brawn, you're the brains, you're the bimbo, you two are useless. And then Shaggy and Scooby are like, well, if that's how you all feel, then we're out of here. And the rest of the gang is like, we didn't actually say, we don't agree with him. We think that you're cool and you're our friends and we like having you around. And Scooby and Shaggy are like, no, we're Splitsville.
We're doing the classic Scooby-Doo trope of going bowling. You know how Shaggy and Scooby love bowling and everybody knows that's a thing they love doing? Great. What a touchstone for the franchise, bowling.
And you know what? If you really want to build up the Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe, put Fred Flintstone in the background. Fred Flintstone and Barney going out with the Brontosaurus gang, bowling up a storm.
That would be great. Really, this film, like a way they could have done it, I don't know if it would have necessarily been better, is just to be like, it's like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit situation where the Hanna-Barbera cartoons and skin people all live in the same world together. And then you can do background stuff, you can chuck in stuff like the Flintstones.
Well,
whatever, it's no big deal.
Here's the thing, Jackson. They already made that movie and it was superior. It was called Looney Tunes Back in Action. And it had
that's true.
Exactly like Roger Rabbit kind of animation, and literally Shaggy and Scooby do appear in it.
That rules.
Not actually a good movie, but much better than this, and a much better...
Damn.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I don't know why the movie decided to separate Shaggy and Scooby from the rest of the gang for so much of the film. Scooby-Doo movies seem to think that Shaggy and Scooby are the best part of Scooby-Doo, but they're not. They're annoying, and they always, no matter what movie they're in, they're the ones I want to hear about the least. Like Scooby and Shaggy were off with Blue Falcon, and I was shut up, I don't care. And I also don't care about how Scooby and Shaggy became friends. That's not something, a boy got a dog is not something that needs to be answered. He bought him, whatever.
Yeah, it's always so weird how these movies think that we, the audience, want to see Shaggy and Scooby alone by themselves because all their friends fucking hate them. Yeah. And, like, separated from everybody and being fucking losers. I mean, this is the exact same plot of the Scooby-Doo movie from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's the exact same shit. It's like Scooby is the chosen one. Shaggy feels left out. Scooby feels like he finally gets to accomplish something. They both feel like they don't bring enough to Mystery Inc.
Contribute or something, yeah.
Right. And it's like, well, Simon Cowell came to Mystery Inc. and said, hey, so I know that you are a team of four human beings that solve mysteries and one talking dog. I'm going to tell you right now, that talking dog is not essential. Simon Cowell, you're wrong. He's a talking dog.
He's the main point.
Without him, they are just the funky phantom without the phantom. Like, it's literally, the talking dog is the one thing that makes them good.
It's what separates them from every other mystery-solving team. I think there was one scene. I think it's when Velma, Fred, and Daphne are, like, trying to find... I think it's the awful, awful cop scene, you know, where Fred gets horny for a cop or whatever.
Oh, my God.
And in that scene, I was like, why has nobody ever done... Because we, on another episode of Cynical Cartoons, we talked about the movie where Daphne and Velma became friends, the live-action Velma movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, why has nobody done a movie about how Fred and Daphne, who, like, it makes sense for them to be friends.
Right.
They're both, like, popular. They're a hunk and a babe. That's how life works. But why are they both such good friends and clearly better friends with Velma than they are with Shaggy and like... That's a movie I would like to see. Well, that's what I would like to hear about.
Well, I think the main problem is that the way that the team is broken down all the time is that Fred, Velma, Daphne are the boring ones, quote unquote, and Shaggy and Scooby are the funny ones. That's not the way that I see Mystery Inc. at all. As characters, I think, like, on a level of most to least interesting, Velma's the most...
Mm-hmm.
Then Shaggy, then Scooby, then Daphne, then Fred. Like,
yeah.
But they always lump them all in together as characters. So I'd like to talk about Mystery Inc. and the weird way they're characterized in this movie.
Absolutely.
They don't do most of their most iconic things. Like, Velma doesn't say jinkies. She doesn't drop her glasses. Fred doesn't set a trap.
You're right. There was no, like, classic Scooby. It's like this movie didn't want to be about Scooby-Doo at all. There was no mystery to solve.
Oh,
there was no ghost.
No, there wasn't.
No horror tropes. And yeah, in fact, at one point, doesn't Fred say jinkies? And Velma looks at him like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Don't say jinkies.
Right. And it's like they think...
Does this movie think we hate Scooby-Doo?
they think that jinkies is like an outdated term, that it's like in Star Wars when people say, like, I've got a bad feeling about this, and everybody in the scene is like, okay, fuckhead, whatever. Like... It's not like jinkies is a term that's specific to the 60s because it's cemented in Scooby-Doo lore. And so it's specific to Scooby-Doo, which you're making a movie about.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head when you're like, this movie is just so cynical. Like, it's weird to go into a movie about a franchise where the movie thinks that you as the audience hate the franchise. Like, that's such a strange...
They're going to reinvent the wheel.
That's what everyone's clamoring for. We're all like, Scooby-Doo is boring. It's dull. Who cares? I want superheroes. That's what I like in my movies. Caveman, voiced by Tracy Morgan. That's what I need. That's what I, as a viewer, I'm craving.
Like, they've been dealt sort of a hard hand. Because it's like, how do you characterize Fred, Daphne, Velma in a different way than they've been done before? Especially Daphne is always the hardest nut to crack. People don't know what to do with her because she, in the original series, is just a bimbo that gets caught all the time. Like, she's just like a mean girl that has a lot of money, that gets caught a lot of the time, and has been characterized as being romantic with Fred, which is gross, but whatever.
See, I always think the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, it's so easy, I think, to make a Scooby-Doo movie that would appeal to a modern audience. I think the best characterization you can do of Fred is like a big himbo. Loves everybody, muscly, stupid as hell. Right. I think that's funny. Fred could be the funniest character in Scooby-Doo.
Do you think that's what they were trying to do here? Because he is by far the horniest character.
Yeah, and the stupidest, but he doesn't come off as like sweet and like innocent stupid,
that's
which I think
true.
He should. Where you're like, oh, he's just kind of like an idiot, but he's lovable and he cares about his friends, and that's nice.
Right.
But no, in this, it's kind of like a weird, annoying, stupid, and everybody seems really sick of him for some reason. I think Daphne, if you want to characterize her, and the movie tries to do this and misses the mark completely, they're like, she's the empath. And imagine if Daphne was treated like the Steven Universe. So Daphne is solving every problem with every villain by empathizing with them and showing compassion and being like, hey, Dick Dastardly, you just love your dog. Let's talk about that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Why are you so upset? I think that would be great for Daphne. And then Velma, you just make a big sarcastic lesbian and you're done. And I don't know, Shaggy, whatever. He's just a wastoid. Who cares?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that all of the characteristics that we're talking about them doing, they kind of try and do so lazily, just so lazily, where like with Daphne, they're like, Daphne's the empath. Daphne solves every problem by caring about people and being nice and being charming. But instead, in this movie, she cleans a vacuum hose and becomes the robot's mom. And that's the only thing she does in the entire movie. It's like, Daphne, say literally one fucking interesting thing in this entire movie, please. She will not. She refuses to be interesting.
Give us a reason, Daphne, for you existing in this movie.
Right.
Yeah, didn't. And yeah, like, I think I have somewhere in my notes that Daphne's, like, the minion characters like her. Like, that's it. That's all. She gets, like, the classic tropes of somehow the vacuum cleaner minion makes all the other minions love Daphne.
Right.
And there's a scene where all the robots fight Cerberus, and there's like triumphant music, like, Daphne did it, and you're like, no, but she didn't.
Right,
like,
exactly.
What is any of this?
This movie is so caught up in trying to be as appealing as possible and trying to hit theaters in every state, in every country in the world, which is not an element anymore because it's not in theaters, it's on VOD. So you fucked up hard because like you neutered it beyond belief. Like you were just saying, like Velma is supposed to be like a smart, sarcastic, queer as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
That's a modern interpretation of Velma, and they haven't been able to do it before, and this is like a big grand scale, like, hey, you can make her gay. It's 2020. You can one-up Disney. You can do it. Instead, Velma can't be gay, but Fred can want to fuck Dick Dastardly dressed up like a porno cop.
Yeah.
And then Dick Dastardly takes off his costume, and Fred still wants to fuck him, but Velma can't just, like, make eyes at the bowling alley girl. Stupid. Shitty.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible
movie.
We're
not allowed that. And, like, Daphne as, like, the compassionate, empathetic character makes so much sense when you realize that none of the other Scooby-Doo characters have that. Like, Velma, great character, but she sucks with people. She doesn't know what she's doing. She's rude.
Exactly.
Like, that's even kind of present in the early Scooby-Doo cartoons, but it's never characterized here. Fred, same thing, kind of like full of himself, and Shaggy just sucks or whatever. Like, it's so strange that when, like you said, Daphne's such a hard nut to crack, nobody's ever gone in that direction. I guess almost Mystery Inc., kind of. They get so close to making Velma have a girlfriend in Mystery Inc. as well. Like, that's, I feel like, the closest we came, despite some of the problems that series does have. But then we just... We went away from it, and now we're here with Scoob, with an exclamation mark, with Blue Falcone.
And it's such a hard thing to do, because I feel like all that they've done with Daphne the entire time that she's been a character since the 1960s is try to revert what they did originally. So originally, Daphne's characterization was like, she gets caught all the time. She's dumb as fuck. That's it. Like, she gets caught all the time, and she's vain, she's dumb. And then after that, they were like, well, what if she, like, she knows how to do kung fu, or she knows how to fix things, or she's the goofball. She's the comedic relief with a brain, not like Shaggy and Scooby.
Yeah.
Do any of those things instead of what you do in this movie. It's not great.
It's so bad. Something that annoyed me and I was kind of confused by. So Dino-Mutt is voiced by Ken Jeong.
Yes.
Ken Jeong is great, and everybody knows Ken Jeong is great at playing like an outlandish, crazy character. Like, that's, sure. You think of Ken Jeong, you think of Chang in Community. You think of, like, his character in, I don't know, The Hangover. Like, just, that's what Ken Jeong does. But he's, like, the most boring straight man in this movie. And I think that's so exemplary of, like, the like, we just get star power for star power's sake. They're like,
right.
It's Ken Jeong. And you're like, oh, a comedic actor. That'll be funny. No. The closest Dino-Mutt gets to making a joke is when somebody's searching through him and he's like, don't look at my search history.
Yeah.
Because presumably Dino-Mutt the robot dog is jerking off to some crook shit and he doesn't want anyone knowing about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the implication there.
And do you think that's what it was that they gave his character like only straight edge stuff to say and they were like, you're the exposition bot. You do the exposition. Also, your other character that you stand next to also does exposition. Dee Dee Skies is also an exposition person. And then he was like, well, let me get crazy with it. Let me do some fun stuff. And they were like, okay, fucking whatever. And the producers took a nap while he went off and talked about Tinder and did jokes about his internet search history. And then they kept two of them in the movie.
Yeah. They were like, we'll keep the tamest jokes you made in the film, Ken Jeong.
I mean,
that's our plan for you.
I found him infinitely more tolerable than fucking Brian the Blue Falcon.
Like, oh,
Brian is the
100%.
Fucking worst character in film history.
Oh my god.
I hate him. 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 I hate him.
I don't know at what point we were meant to empathize with him. Like,
no.
Surely, because at the end, they're like, hey, now he is a superhero. But
right.
At no point did they ever, like, put in the work to make me care.
Here's who would empathize with Brian in my mind. Is straight cis white men, rich, come from a family legacy of like doctors or lawyers or presidents or politicians or something. And they're like, I feel so much pressure on me to become a doctor because my dad and my granddad are both doctors. So I don't want to become a doctor, but my legacy, my bones, my blood tell me that I have to be. Like, that is what his character is about. And it is so exemplary and so indicative of this thing that goes on in Hollywood right now, especially, this conversation is very big, of like, Rey Skywalker was created to be a character that does not have a legacy, and that's what makes her special, is that she is powerful on her own, she's more powerful than the legacy characters, but instead they make her a Palpatine because blood is more powerful than random circumstance. And Brian is supposed to be the Blue Falcon. Everybody around him is more competent than he is. Like, Dee Dee Skies is, and Dino-Mutt are both, like, these, like, straight edge, like, I would do your job better than you. But his arc in the movie isn't about, like, I'm shit at this, I should be good at this, but I'm bad at it, so I should give it up to somebody who's better.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about, like, I should just buckle down and be good at it.
It's not even like I should buckle down. He just...
You're right, by the end, he's still a fuckhead.
Yeah, but he's just like, oh, I just have to do it. That's my message, is that inherently I'm good at it, and I just need to accept that.
Yeah.
It is insane, isn't it, really, if you think about it, that the African-American female character and the Asian-voiced dog both have to go to the straight, cis, white male character, it's, like, you're great, we're here for you.
Yes,
That's insane.
It's insane, because I was watching interviews, because I was interested. I love Kiersey Clemons as an actor, right? She does a serviceable job in this movie. Her character is boring as shit. They don't do anything with Dee Dee. But fucking, I tried to find an interview with her talking about her character, because I was like, what does Kiersey Clemons think this character is about?
I play Dee Dee. And Dee Dee is a pilot of the Falcon Fury. She gets everyone where they need to be on time and handles all of these different personalities that are happening around her at the same time. And she plays a very big part in leading Shaggy and Scooby to safety.
Basically, what she said about her character is like, her character is really important to the legacy because she gets everybody where they need to go and gives everybody pep talks. And I'm like, you turned this character into the black driver, and...
That sucks. Oh, that sucks so much.
She's literally just there to be like, Blue Falcon, you can do it.
You're important. I work for you.
It's such shit. I hate this movie.
Yeah, me too. I can't stand it. Watching it, it's like an hour and a half long, but somehow it felt like I was watching a 4 to 5 hour movie.
Yeah, I watched it twice. It felt like a week.
Oh,
it was fucking miserable.
Why?
Because I watched it once to suck up everything, and then I had to watch it again to make sure that I got everything down in my notes. And I think that I really fleshed out my problems with it on the second viewing.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I'm sure I would have gotten something more coherent, but I was full of a white hot rage by the end of it. I just couldn't. The only characters that I thought were almost, and not, let me preface it by saying they weren't, but almost characterized in a way that I nearly liked was Dick Dastardly and Muttley. The closest this movie got to an emotional anything is when Dick Dastardly gets into the underworld and he's like, my treasure, and you think he's running for the treasure, but instead he runs for Muttley. And then he picks up Muttley and gives him a hug. I was like, that's great. Not enough movies are like, here is the villain, and the villain has a best friend. And they love doing crime together. And their emotional bond is great. Like, you could have made this movie, you know, if you wanted to do something interesting, and I thought maybe they'd go in this direction, but they didn't. You could be like, Scooby and Shag, you know, they are having this falling out or whatever. Maybe Dick Dastardly and Muttley's love for each other could have made Scooby and Shag reassess their relationship. And
right.
They're like, look, they get on so well whilst they're like robbing famous landmarks or whatever.
Like, that could be us, Scoob.
Oh, Raggy, all right. Yeah, see, that would be nice.
Well, and the thing that this movie tries to do, the reason that I disagree with you there, I did think they were kind of cute together.
Please.
They were better characterized than most of the cast. I will say that I was kind of disgusted by that moment because it's a weird, cynical, like, this is a movie about a boy and his dog, and a boy and his dog, and a boy and his dog, and another boy and his dog. And I'm like, fucking get over yourself. Can you fucking shut up for 5 seconds? Because, like, they just realized that there were so many characters in the Hanna-Barbera universe that all had dogs. They, like, in a very Batman v Superman way, they were just like, what if we just, like, made that the thing, and the audience will like pick up on it.
That's the point.
Yeah, and so
that is a good point.
And so at the end of the movie, they set up this thing that I think was reshot or something, because the end of this movie makes no fucking sense. Who cares?
Oh, it's so strange.
At the end of the movie, they set up something where it's about a door to the riches, right? That can only be sealed off, and Cerberus can only be sealed inside by a dog and his best friend, the human. And it's this whole thing about, like, the descendant of Cerberus is the only person that can seal it off or whatever, and so it has to be Scooby-Doo and Shaggy. But they literally have a door that has a paw print on one side and a handprint from a human on the other side, and I'm like, okay, this would be kind of an interesting moment if Dick Dastardly and Muttley, they were the ones who sacrificed themselves because they realized the world would be destroyed if they didn't, and they're willing to do it because they can see that Scooby and Shaggy's bond is so strong. Or Dino Mutt and Blue Falcon, Brian gets locked away forever, gives up the title to Dee Dee. I don't fucking know anything other than what they did.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. Like, I'm always a fan of the villainous take. Like, obviously I don't want to destroy the world, because if I destroy the world, what is there to rob the Eiffel Tower from?
I'm on the world.
That would have been Yeah, I live here. It getting wrecked by hell is bad for me, Dick Dastardly.
Right.
So if Dick Dastardly was like, we'll fuck off into hell, and we'll just chill there and we'll find a way out. Sorry, everybody. Great. I love it. Yeah, I thought it was weird that this movie spent so long being like, Dick Dastardly is the villain. And then at the end, they were like, no. Cerberus is the, like, that's the big fight.
Yeah, in literally the last 15 minutes of the movie, they bring out the big monster that they're supposed to fight. And it's like, I don't know. It's just so fucking stupid.
It's exhausting.
Right. So in that moment where Cerberus, the Hound of Hell, the three-headed dog of hell, shows up, and all of Mystery Inc. indiscriminately is like, we need to fight this thing and seal it back inside this tomb. We're not going to question its existence. We're not going to say, hey, maybe it's projectors, or maybe, well, ghosts aren't real, so let's test it. Like, that's the thing. There is no mystery in this movie. The only mystery is Fred, Velma, Daphne trying to find Shaggy and Scooby, and we fucking know where they are the whole movie.
Yeah, yeah, we've been told.
So, like, it gets the end of the movie where they're fighting Cerberus, and you're like, okay, so Velma here should be like, I know what's happening here. I can figure it out here. There's projectors there and there and there. And then Fred tries to fight it, and he goes through it, and he's like, oh, it's a ghost. It's fake or it's real. But there's nothing like that. They're like, indiscriminately, this thing is real, and it's actually from hell, and hell does exist, and we do believe in ghosts now.
That's it. That's, yeah.
I don't know.
Like, I was expecting, and like, it's so optimistic of me, but I was like, surely there's going to be like a moment where they're like, wait a second. And I thought, you know, because they set up earlier, they're like, oh, the real Blue Falcon is, you know, in the Bahamas or some shit. Like, oh. I was like, oh, maybe there's going to be some reveal where, like, Dick Dastardly is the real Blue Falcon testing his son or something.
I thought you were saying that, like, the real Blue Falcon would be mad that his son took his mantle and decided to orchestrate this whole thing to dismantle him. Yeah, like, anything other than what they did. That would be
great. Yeah, or, like, I kind of thought when the Blue Falcon was first introduced, I thought maybe it was going to be, again, like, he's like, yeah, I am the Blue Falcon. And then the reveal at the end would be like, no, he's not. He's been Dick Dastardly this whole time. And Scooby and Shaggy, you've been sucked in because you're idiots or whatever.
Right.
You stupid morons.
Fucking God. You're right. There's so many different ways they could have done this movie that made more sense. Like, at one point, Daphne even says, she, like, almost looks at camera when she says this. She's like, and the thing is that this is the most important mystery we've ever solved because our friends' lives are on the line, and it's not just a guy in a spooky mask this time. And it's like, well, fucking guess what? Their lives aren't on the line. We know that they're just, like, off eating ice cream with fucking Blue Falcon in space, and that they'll just show up tomorrow. Like Fred, Daphne, and Velma could have not even known about any of this happening and not shown up, and it would not have changed the outcome at all.
Wow, that is absolutely true. They are really useless for this whole movie. Wow, I didn't even... Huh. They just don't need to be there. That's crazy.
The ending is real horseshit, and it just doesn't make any goddamn sense where Shaggy... Okay, this is ridiculous. I'm sorry that if it seems like I'm dominating this conversation, I don't mean to. I have a lot to say. I'm ranting.
I hate this movie. I absolutely understand.
Okay, great. So at the end of the movie, Shaggy and Scooby come to the door where one of them has to be sealed inside for all eternity in hell with Cerberus the dog. It's implied that they will pick Scooby-Doo because he is the descendant of Cerberus or whatever. Instead, Shaggy decides to sacrifice himself. And this is really fucked up, right? Because on the one hand, Scooby-Doo is a dog. Okay, great. Dogs are less important than human beings. That is a fact. I'm sorry.
That's true.
That's just a solid fact.
I'm glad you said it. It's true.
Number two, he is an 11-year-old Great Dane. Those motherfuckers live like 9 or 10 years tops. So, like, he's going to die pretty soon anyway. Shaggy's a 20-year-old man in the prime of his life who just fucking wants to die, I guess. And then there's this whole weird complex thing about in the movie where they're like, Shaggy and Scooby aren't important and they feel bad about it. Then Scooby learns that he's important. So Shaggy feels inadequate because he's not important. So at the end of the movie, he decides to sacrifice his life because he's not important and he wants to do something significant. So he becomes a martyr and chooses to fucking kill himself so that he can be important. And I'm like, what are you trying to say here? What the fuck?
What is the message there?
Then he comes back.
Yeah, he comes back out of like a magic statue that appears. Like, and then there's a dance sequence. Great.
Yeah.
The end.
Well, and it's so stupid because like they're like, okay, so this guy locked his dog away inside the other realm.
Alexander's tomb? Who knows?
Right.
Yeah.
And so Alexander must have designed a way to get his dog back afterwards. And it's like, no. No, the point of this is that he would never get his dog back. So, like, we've seen so many different things set up throughout the movie of, like, Dick Dastardly designed a portal that goes into this thing, but he couldn't get his dog back.
Mm.
Fucking, that makes more sense. Send the dog in and then go to Dick Dastardly and say, hey, I know that we're enemies, but whatever, you can see that we have this bond, so make that portal get our dog back, and then they could all redesign it and work on it together. I don't fucking know.
Absolutely. And also, like, you know, you were saying, like, let's get the Hex Girls in. How upset were you at the very end of that movie when they're like, oh, we've got somebody to play the music, and you're like, great, they're setting up the Hex Girls, and then it's Brian fucking DJing. Oh my God.
That is not what I thought, but that would make so much more sense if it was the fucking Hex Girls putting on a concert, or Josie and the Pussycats, or literally any of the other fucking bands from the Hanna-Barbera extended universe. Instead, yes, it is Brian the DJ, because he's the greatest white man that ever lived, by the way.
The film's really about Brian, you know? Somebody wanted to make a Blue Falcon movie, And they were like, let me. And they were like, no, you can make a Scooby-Doo movie. And they were like, well, okay, but I'm putting Blue Falcon in there.
It makes no fucking sense that they decided to make that character the thing, right? Because I talked earlier about Josie and the Pussycats and Gem and the Holograms. Not the most popular characters, I get it, right? Fucking who... what superhero have Scooby-Doo and the gang crossed paths with 5,000 times? Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Batman.
Yeah,
put
yeah.
Batman in the movie. He's like the most popular character that Warner Brothers owns. Why not put him in mm-hmm. the movie? It would make so much fucking sense. And it would be stupid. As opposed to fucking Blue Falcon, yeah, do it. Just fucking do it.
It's crazy. Like, my cultural reference for the Blue Falcon is Harvey Birdman, attorney at law,
right,
where his name is the Blue Falcone, and he loves giving everyone silk scarves. And I think that's, like, most people's cultural touchstone for the Blue Falcon is something like that. So it's so crazy for them to be like, this, kids will latch onto this. Every kid will want a Blue Falcon, like, action figure or whatever. People will be clamoring for a Blue Falcon spinoff. But no, that's not the case.
Well,
nobody wants that. And like, they were saying that this was going to be the beginning of like a Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe, right? Like, that was the plan?
Yeah. And it's so strange because, like,
God.
Yes, Blue Falcon is kind of known a little bit in the cultural zeitgeist because of Dino Mutt, his dog, who I did watch growing up. I did watch Dino Mutt cartoons. When I watched Dino Mutt cartoons, it was part of Dino Mutt the Dog Wonder, and he didn't fucking hang out with the Blue Falcon. He was just doing stuff by himself. Even in his own show, the Blue Falcon plays second fiddle to the talking dog, who's more interesting than him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not even the actual Blue Falcon in this movie. Like, if they wanted to make the Blue Falcon
yeah.
the focus,
right.
like, say they were like, we're making a superhero film that Scooby and the gang are in, and then they could have just picked the original Blue Falcon and done a superhero movie.
Right.
Because, like, he wasn't cool. Like, the Blue Falcon, I didn't like seeing him on screen. I never enjoyed anything that happened to him
right.
or with him.
Right.
So, like, it's, you know, like, they made him pathetic. They made him this weird, terrible... It's the most exhausting movie I have ever watched.
It's true.
Like, I just...
It's a lot.
I just couldn't cope. Hey, I'm looking on Wikipedia, and apparently they're making live-action versions of the Jetsons, the Flintstones, and Wacky Races.
And Tom and Jerry.
Which is...
Tom and Jerry
live
was supposed
action,
to come out
Tom
in December.
And Jerry.
Yeah, live action animation hybrid was supposed to come out in December of this year. Probably not going to happen because of COVID. But still may not happen because it's just a fucking terrible idea. And that was also going to star Ken Jeong.
What?
Yeah, I went down the rabbit hole this morning. I did not appreciate it. It made me mad and it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Because, like, looking at Wikipedia, it seems like it's implying that Scoob is the beginning of the cinematic universe.
Right.
And then they'll add the Jetsons, the Flintstones, Wacky Races, and that. But Wacky Races, the Flintstones, and Jetsons are going to be live action. So how are they going to be... What's...
I would say that out of all those ideas, the Jetsons is the only one that actually sounds like it could work. So you'll be back on the podcast to talk about the Wacky
Look.
Racers movie in a year and a half. Fucking hell.
Oh, guaranteed.
Jesus Christ.
I will be here and I will be equally as upset when that happens. Oh, yeah. My God. Like, I mean, like, we can only hope that this film did so poorly critically and commercially that Warner Brothers just, like, pull the pin and they're like, okay, it's not happening. We're going to move away from this. Fuck all of our other franchises. We're just going to keep pumping out mediocre superhero movies about Batman. That's the dream. That's all we can hope for.
Because the thing is, they get to the end of the movie, right? And they have, like, this big, like, credits teaser that's such a fucked up sequel tease, right? Where, like, during the movie, they don't have any of these characters. And then in the credits, they're like, hey, remember, like, Jabberjaw and the Great Grape Ape and Adam Ant? Don't you want to see them? Like, you could... see them if you watch this movie five times in theaters. Like, don't you want to see... I'm like, no, I don't actually give a fuck about those characters. And if Jabberjaw had showed up in this movie, that would have been kind of fun. Cool. Like,
yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. I think with the accumulated nostalgia that Hanna-Barbera has got for all of their old cartoons from, like, the 60s and 70s,
right.
they can probably get one movie out of it. That's,
right.
That's it. I think they can get one movie. I think... a Jabberjaw cameo is all the world will ever want. they'll use up any nostalgia they have with that.
And here's the thing, is that to make that work, if you really want to do like this big cinematic universe thing, make it a Spider-Verse. Like, make it so that adults can really enjoy it. Give the characters genuine arcs somehow. Like, figure that out for Jabberjaw. Fucking figure it out. And if you can't, don't make a Jabberjaw movie, right? Like, if you can figure out how to make all these characters appear in one movie and make it make sense and make it fun and make it somehow cathartic, I think that they could do that. I think that it would take them embracing what makes the shows goofy, but not even making it more adult, just making it more accessible for adults. Like, yeah. Spider-Verse isn't a movie that I'm like, a kid couldn't watch this. Like, I'd take a 7-year-old to watch Spider-Verse. But yeah, I also, absolutely, as an adult, watched it like 5 or 6 times and enjoyed it. So
it's an incredible film. Yeah, for sure. And that, I think you're right. That just comes down to like interesting characterization and making the people feel like actual real people. And I guess there's this weird problem, I suppose, that like every movie or like remake or whatever of Scooby-Doo that tries to do is they're like, these are the archetypes of these characters, and so we have to make fun of these archetypes or like take them in a strange direction, or like we're limited to what's already been done before. And I guess what I don't know, I've not really read the comics, but what Spider-Verse did well is it seemed like they were just like, look, this is what our Peter Parker is going to be like. This is what our Aunt May is going to be like, because we can pick and choose and we can make them something interesting. Plus a great soundtrack, you know, that this movie didn't have at all.
And they have like 8 different versions of a very similar archetype in that. They have like 8 different versions of Spider-Man, and they're all distinct and they're all interesting. And it's like, why don't you cop that a little bit? Like, why don't you fucking cop from yourselves? Like Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase, right? Had like that moment where the modern Mystery Inc. meets the 1960s Mystery Inc. and they're like, wow, we're so different, but kind of the same. That's weird. And yeah, Here's how we're different. Fucking do, absolutely, that. And like bring in like pub name Scooby-Doo, What's New Scooby-Doo, fucking all of them. Like Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And the live action movies, and just be like Cameo City, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Give me Scooby-Doo, Enter the Scooby-Verse. That's a movie I think I'd enjoy.
That would be fucking sick. It'd be so good.
Or just pick one audience. Be like, yeah, we're making, exactly, a movie for kids. We're making a movie for kids, so we're not going to have any references to old Scooby-Doo. We're going to get rid of the pretense. Let's not even make it a Scooby-Doo movie. Or we're making a Scooby-Doo movie for people who loved Scooby-Doo as a kid to give them a sense of nostalgia.
Right.
So let's make a movie that is everything that was great about Scooby-Doo in one film.
Yep.
But you can't have it both ways. Or, like, let's just make a weird, cynical, animated film. Like, let's make a Blue Falcon movie. Let's just do that.
Right.
Let's fuck off Scooby-Doo. Like, you got so many options, but instead they tried to do all fucking 20 at once, and it was just soulless.
And the thing is that I think that you can take all of those wildly veering ideas and tones and make them all mash up into one thing. Like, if we're talking about having it be like a big crossover of like Spider-Verse proportions, you can have like old school campy Scooby-Doo and like,
yeah,
Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, edgy Scooby-Doo, and have them meet and have that be what's funny about it, that they're different and that they don't get along and then they figure it out, you know? But like,
yeah,
they do nothing. Like, that would be thrilling to see, like, the live action actors somehow all show up as their characters, but like in their 40s. That would be yeah, so fun.
That would be a fuck blast. It. Absolutely. But
this movie sucks.
Not
shit
at all what we got.
Not great.
So bad.
Also,
it's just, yeah, look, 0 stars. Go on.
Yeah, exactly. It's fucking terrible, and I do not want to watch it again. I almost bought this before I watched it, and I'm so glad I didn't.
There's so much that can be done with, like, Scooby-Doo as a franchise, and I think of all the Hanna-Barbera TV shows that were made, it's kind of the only one that has, like, a sizable amount of nostalgia that people could latch onto and that could make a movie entertaining and do well. I don't,
right,
think fucking the Flintstones or the Jetsons or even Wacky Races is really as like appreciated or as beloved as Scooby-Doo is. Scooby-Doo's had so many incarnations over the years that basically every generation has enjoyed it as a kid,
right,
in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, they just never quite capitalize on it properly when they're making a movie, and you just get dog shit like this. Why was there a This American Life reference so early in this movie?
Yeah, it's so weird that it's part of the repackaging of the characters and being like, they were born in 2003. And you're like, what the fuck? Yeah. No, that doesn't make any sense. When I watched the cartoon in 2003, they were 20 years old. Adults. And that was already 30 years after they were invented. Like, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's weird that 7-year-old Shaggy had a smartphone and listened to podcasts. Like, shut the fuck up. Get out of here.
I liked that 7-year-old Shaggy was clearly an unlikable kid.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, he's like, true. I have no friends, but they never gave me a reason for him having no friends. So you're like, I guess this kid sucks. Like, I guess nobody will be his friend but a dog. Mm-hmm. That's great.
You know what? The one good thing about the Ira Glass cameo is that it means that maybe we can get a chance to be in the sequel when it comes up. Because Shaggy does listen to podcasts, and he does seem like somebody who would love Sans Pants Radio.
Absolutely. Shaggy's going to be listening to cynical cartoons on the same beach and being like, wow, they are not kind to me. They've called me pathetic more than once. Uh-huh. Damn.
Fuck this movie sucks.
Fuck this movie. Don't watch this movie.
Yeah.
If you've watched the movie, somehow figure out a way to unwatch the movie.
It's true. I'm going to neuralize myself after this, like Men in Black.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the same. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch all of season one of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Where they didn't care about trying to make it entertaining. They had a budget of like $10.
It's true. They weren't up their own asses about how do we make Fred, Daphne, and Velma different? No, they were like, how do we rip off another cartoon that we just made 3 months ago to make it profitable?
How do we use the same sound? If we've got 20 sound effects, we're going to use this across 3 seasons of a TV show. Let's make it last. You want, back when the only question they had was, how are we going to come up with a new kind of ghost for the Mystery Inc. team? You know?
Yeah.
Those were the days.
Oh my God, they don't fucking fight any ghosts in this. It's so sad.
It's not a single ghost.
At the beginning of the movie, they see like all of their iconic fiends that they used to fight. And they're like, hey, look, here's like the fucking submariner, and here's the creepo or whatever. Look at that. They did all the things that you wanted to see them do in this movie. And now that all that boring shit's out of the way, let's fucking go to space.
Yeah, we know you fucking hated Scooby-Doo. We know everybody watching this movie loathes the Mystery Inc. team. So fuck all that mystery-solving shit off. We're going to go through the movie so we can get to the credits and show you the great Grape Ape, what everyone's clamoring for. Who even the fuck was Grape Ape? What did he
fucking do? I don't know.
Oh my God.
This movie's fucking
terrible. Well, there's a strain of pot called Grape Ape, according to Wikipedia. So that's pretty cool. Oh my God.
Oh boy. So that's Scoob.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jackson, for joining me on this episode. We fucking talked about this movie when it was announced like a year and a half ago. We knew exactly what it was going to be, and we still got our fucking hopes up. You could probably listen back to that episode, and we were like, this is going to suck shit, and we're so excited.
Yeah, I'm sure back then we were like, maybe it'll be this, maybe it'll be that.
Our eyes were so full of hope.
We should have known. What's wrong with us? God damn. Well, I look forward to in another 10 years when they're trying again, doing another episode of Cynical Cartoons on fucking do with an exclamation mark or whatever.
Yeah, it's going to
be
like SC0084 or whatever the fuck. I'm so angry.
Oh my God. Just truly abominable.
Yeah.
Don't watch it.
Bad shit. Jackson, thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Anytime.
Where can people find you online?
If you head to sanspantsradio.com, you'll see all of the podcasts that we do here at Sanspants, and I am on a lot of them, so pick one. There's a chance I'll be there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at @alldogsaredead. So yeah, check me out.
Great. And I'm on Twitter at @stoptweetingmia. Thank you for listening to the Cynical Cartoons podcast for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant, and I'm here if you need to talk.
The speech is my recital. I think it's very vital.
Why do I know this voice?
Time it's tricky in the title.
Here we go.
Tricky.
Wow. What a tasty treat. Club sandwich, which is everything. Someone who eats everything. I don't have to guess because I know exactly who this is.
Scooby-Doo!
Hello, everybody.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.